I always feel like I sound like if Kermit the Frog had laryngitis. Like that's what I like in my head. That's what I sound like. Like I have this like ridiculously absurd, raspy and deep
Are you
voice.
Bearded with glasses?
No glasses. Definitely bearded though.
Bearded. I don't know. Somehow I hear the beard. So I don't even know what that means, but I do hear the beard.
I fear the beard.
It's just the power of it. That's what all. It is.
Are we in mid? Are you in mid thirties yet, or are you still in your twenties?
No, mid thirties, man. You are nailing it. Okay. Yeah, mid thirties.
You're listening to Nothing Important. Please enjoy the show.
That's great. That works.
This is the Nothing Important Podcast. Insert witty tagline here. I'm Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host Dave. Dave, how's it going?
I'm feeling pretty fantastic this evening, especially after watching that Sunday night football ass-whooping the Broncos handed the Packers.
I didn't even know they were playing.
I knew that's pretty much how you would respond. Yes.
I was like, I know, I was trying to like... I was trying to mess with you and tell you that the Bears lost, but then you said that that you're watching the game. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Dave actually watches this shit.
Yes, I actually watch this shit.
So did the Bears win?
No.
Yeah.
No, they lost on a last-second field goal.
Oh, well, you know, losing is kind of a Chicago thing. I'm kind of excited right now that I'm recording in my garage. So you said it might be kind of echoing on the microphone and I didn't hear that, but it may be, but it's actually kind of funny to be out here at 10:30 at night. Like it's just me, my neighbor's car and like a bunch of furniture that we thought we needed like 2 months ago, but we don't fucking need it all.
Nice.
But you know, I'm literally sitting next to, I set up in like this little area, like because we redid our business, so we have a bunch of furniture that we're going to try to sell for that. So wherever it is in the garage is just kind of where it's been for the past few weeks, and we've been slowly clearing it out. So it kind of made like this nice little like desk area, and I'm like, oh, cool. Well, I'm gonna set up the podcast shit and the computer over there. But then I realized how close I am to the actual garage door. So, like, but being in the city, it's just funny the kind of things that happen in the alleyway. You know what I mean? So, like, at any given moment, you could hear, like, some rice rocket, like, careen down the street or a bunch of Eastern European guys arguing. Or perhaps you'll hear the subtle rustling of a hobo in our fucking garbage can while we're recording this. So... I'm kind of intrigued, like, when I listen to, like, proof listen? Anyway, whenever I listen to it before I post it.
Listen back.
I think it's going to be, like, it's going to be interesting just the kind of noises that I hear in the background.
Mm.
It kind of almost reminds me of, remember when we did the episode with the porn stars and the guys from First Base and Beyond?
Yeah, and there was an air show going on over top of us.
Yeah, there was the air show going on, and like the jets flew by at like the most perfect moment. We couldn't have timed it any better. It was like the opening ceremonies, and I wasn't sure how that was going to sound. And then when I went back and heard the actual episode, it's amazing how loud those jets actually were.
I know, right?
Right, and then conversely, so we might get a lot of alley noise, but also I think it's funny that anybody who happens to walk by, because people do all the time up here, you know, like alleys are valid shortcuts, you know, uh-huh. They're not like the gravel pockmark, you know, they're like little streets.
Right.
And it's just funny to me think that there's probably like three people walking by right now that could probably hear me on the other side of this garage door.
Just talking to yourself. But then, you know, that's, hey man, happens in the city. See, people talk to themselves all the time.
That's true. And you know what? It might not be that bad. Mark Maron, he fucking records in his garage. And he had the President of the United States on his podcast.
He is a bad dude. He is a...
Yeah. Now, granted, you know, his listenership is only about 100,000 times that of ours.
Right.
But still. Yeah, but still, you know.
Well,
like,
that's, you know, they say if you want to, you know, emulate somebody, emulate the best.
Right,
so
exactly.
He's one of the best, and if he podcasts out of his garage, then, you know, broadcast out that car hole, buddy.
Who am I to judge? I'm not here to judge.
Right. I'm here to copy. You know, I'm here to copy your formula for success, which is why one of our guests coming up soon is one of our guests.
Exactly. Like if there's coattails, oh, best believe I will ride them.
Oh, that's right, baby. I'm throwing Wolverine claws into those coattails.
You know what's awesome? Before I came out here, my wife showed me a Christmas magazine, like a Christmas toy magazine.
It's that time of year already?
Yeah, but you say that though, but like that got me thinking, when's the last time I've actually seen like a Christmas toy catalog? Like this is a catalog. Like those have kind of gone out of style. Remember when we were young? You know, like pre-internet and all that bullshit, you would get these massive, like 600-page JCPenney and Sears catalogs.
Hell yeah!
And it would have like every toy in the world, and it was like reading for like a month because you would just sit on the floor of your house and file through and see like all these toys that you knew you weren't going to get, but you'd like circle them and see how much it is, you know. Or for me, being a video game guy, it was always a big deal because that's how you knew what video games were coming out because they had to sell them for the Christmas season. So it'd be like, you know, whatever game for the Nintendo or Super Nintendo coming out this year. There's none of this, you know, there's no internet or stuff back then. So like 2 months out, you would know what games were coming up, which was a big deal back then. So it was like you'd always wait for the end. And then they went out of style because everything is online now. And lo and behold, they're bringing back the Christmas catalog. I was pretty excited about that.
That's interesting.
Right, and then it got me thinking, what a lame-ass thing to get excited about. Like, that's, like, because my wife showed me that. She's like, oh, a Christmas catalog. And I was like, whoa!
Well, it's like that meme that I recently saw online where it's, you know, back in the day, it'd be like, I got a letter, big whoop. Like, oh, my God, I got an email. And now it's like, oh, I got 100 emails, big whoop. Oh, my God, I got a letter, you know?
Totally. And then
the novelty
I guess it
has
all
changed.
Exactly, because if you go, you know, if you get mail nowadays, that's a pretty big deal.
I know, right? Especially a handwritten letter. When's the last time you got a handwritten letter?
Well, I mean, by nature of my business, I actually kind of get them every once in a while, but it's never anything good.
Well, personal life then.
Yeah. Right, personal life, I can't even fucking remember. Maybe like a card from my mom. Like a birthday card or something like that.
I had a pen pal when I was like 14, and that lasted till I was like 14. So that's the last time I had a handwritten letter.
I never did the whole pen pal thing, but you had no correspondence back and forth with your pen pal?
Yeah, it was a friend that moved from here down to Florida. So we wrote back and forth like, you know, 7-8 times probably. And then it just kind of fizzled out.
Oh, man.
I still remember his name though.
What's his name?
His name is Mike.
Mike, where's Mike from?
In Illinois. he moved. I can't remember what town he moved to. I think it was Tampa, Florida.
You know, now that you mentioned that, we should track him down.
That would be super awkward.
Exactly. You know what's you know who I've been kind of throwing around the idea of actually trying to get a hold of? My email.
Biological father?
You shut up. He went to go get mom a pack of cigarettes, and he's coming back any fucking moment now.
First he had to plant the tobacco seeds, then grow the plant, then plant the trees for the paper. Right.
Right. Nothing but the best for my mother. Nothing but the best. He's going to hand grow it himself, and then I'm going to take those cigarettes, and I'm going to show them right in your face. So what I was thinking is my personal email address is my first name, my middle initial, and then my last name at yahoo.com, right?
Right. And that is a very, very long email address. My first name, my middle initial, my last name at yahoo.com.
Yeah. All those words spelled out exactly like that. No, but obviously it's like my real real information at yahoo.com. While my name isn't exactly like John Smith and completely common, it, you know, there are other people out there with my exact name and my last name as such. And every once in a while, I'll get a letter from this other person who shares a name with me, except for his email doesn't have the middle initial. So he's constantly getting emails for me because people just think it's my name at yahoo.com and they always forget the middle initial. And I've always kind of wanted to invite that guy on the show just to see what he knows about me. Because I know for a fact, there's been at least a couple job interviews where somebody sent me the information. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? A day's gone by and they said they were going to send me the information. And I never got it. Only until 2 days later, he'll say, hey, other Brian, here's your interview. Good luck on your job. Like something like that. And at first it was kind of weird because like this dude obviously gets a lot of my email, but now it's almost comforting that there's another one of me out there in the world.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I've always thought about like tracking him down because I think over the years, like one, he has to know at least what I do for an occupation. Mm-hmm. He has to have some sort of idea.
Right.
And then also, I was thinking he has to know probably at least, or, you know, probably gotten emails from at least a couple girls that I was interested in, or maybe even like what kind of weird websites, like I signed up for like way back ago, 20 years ago when I created this email.
Your free trial to Brazzers.com has expired.
Right. I would like to, well, but if that was the case, I'd like to think he would do me a solid and he would probably just like secret Santa me.
Oh, we got the phone call here.
All right, that's them.
Wait one.
All right.
Hello, this is Dave.
Hi, David. My name's Mackenzie, and I'm calling on behalf of Dominic to connect you guys for his interview.
Hello, Mackenzie. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Doing just great. Yeah, whenever you're ready, just send him on over.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and connect you all. Dominic, are you still on the line?
Yeah.
All right, and you're going to be talking to David.
Okay, great.
Hello, Dominic.
Hey, David. How's it going?
Pretty good. Can you wait 1 second? I'm going to get the other host, Brian, on the line.
Sure.
Okay. Brian?
Yes, hello.
Dominic is on.
Dominic, how's it going? Good, Dominic. How are you tonight?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, awesome. Thanks for joining our show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Dominic Flores on the Someone Important Hotline. He's in our Brand is Crisis with Sandra Bullock, and he's also in The Meddler with Susan Sarandon. How's it going, my friend?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing good.
Good. Welcome to our little slice of the internet. We're glad to have you on. Dave and I were just talking about our lame-ass excitement about how my wife today received an actual Christmas catalog.
Okay.
When's the last time you see one of those?
You mean a legit one from like a department store?
Yeah, like it's like a legit like catalog.
Like paper, a paper this? Catalog, not an online ad or anything.
No, I'm with you. I'm of the generation that I looked through my Sears catalog every Christmas and I would pick one item on the page that had to be mine.
See, I just said that, right? And like
catalogs.
Absolutely. And you always had to circle the toy that you really wanted, you know, just so your parents would know which one, or Santa Claus would know exactly which one you wanted.
Well, I would actually go all out and I would circle like every page. So sometimes it might be a piece of gym equipment or even like a Swiss Army knife. As a kid, I just had an imagination that perhaps maybe everything could appear under that tree in addition to the toys.
See, but that's a good way to hedge your bets though. You know, if you circle everything, you know, you're like increasing your chances of getting something, you know.
One thing at least. True. One, as long as you're okay with disappointment. And as actors, you know, actors have to be okay with the odds. So
absolutely.
Oh my gosh. So you have a lot of projects coming out. And I'm always I kind of ask everybody this, but I guess it just kind of intrigues me, like, what, how do you keep everything, you know, when you're working on multiple roles and you have multiple projects, how do you keep everything prioritized and how do you keep all the different characters and projects straight in your head?
Well, I've just recently started to be working at the capacity that I would enjoy. So I haven't really had more than one character at a time. And even with these projects, you know, you film them and then you wait for them to come out. And in between, you you do other projects. So I was able to tackle my role in Our Brand is Crisis and then my role in The Meddler one at a time. And then also The Meddler was more of a supporting role. I'm just in one major scene, actually. There's a lot of cameos from other celebrities, but it wasn't quite the intensity of working for 3 months with Sandra Bullock on Our Brand is Crisis. So, but I know what you're talking about. It gets a little hectic. In the auditioning world, it gets tricky, too, because it comes up a lot more specifically when you're auditioning for parts, because those are times when you can have 5 auditions in a day. And you got to really map it out. And, you know, you might be a lawyer in one and someone's dad in one and a doctor in another one. So, yeah, that's when I understand your question. It gets it gets pretty entertaining. I like to keep it fun. So
that's so how I manage it. For those of us that aren't in the business, what's the typical audition process like? Is it like they show, I guess, in the movies where you go to like some obscure like mini mall and there's like a you know, like kind of a dark room and these like 3 people staring at you and they're just kind of like, go, like, what is the audition process like?
I think the mini mall is more for like those open castings.
That's what I was going to say. That sounds like an open mall.
I'm confused. Okay. Or
something. I had those dreams that somehow you could walk into a restaurant or something and be discovered by some producer. Mm-hmm. That's quickly not the case, maybe in the 1920s. But nowadays, there's a little more to it in the casting. So my castings end up being still a very dark room with 3 people staring at you. That doesn't change. But yeah, there are offices all around L.A. in different studios. And you walk in and you sign your name on a little sign-in sheet. And you look around the room and there's about 10 guys who look exactly like your own unique self. And that becomes its own eye-popping moment when you see your doppelganger times 10. And then when you go in and read, you're dealing with a casting director who's been reading these same words over and over and over again. So you have to somehow spark up that room with your own charming authenticity and try to change the mood of the room so that everything becomes fun again. So. Right, I do that with, what's the word? Mixed results. Depends on my day.
Because as you were sitting there, I was just imagining like some producer or something who has been through the same scenario like 30 times that day. And they just walk through the door. They're like, all right, you're like a British mercenary. You know, your father was in World War II and you feel like...
There's a buffer. First, you go in front of the casting director that they've hired and she gets all the riffraff. Out. So by the time the directors and producers meet with you, the people that are in front of them are contenders. So they usually, it's a little more fun when you get to be in front of the producers and directors. But for actors, you know, they'll take anything. Just getting the audition is a certain win on some levels in this town. Sitting by that phone.
What was your first audition for?
You know, I got lucky. My first audition was for a film called Star Maps. It was with a director named Miguel Arteta, kind of put him on the map. He's a really great indie film director, and he does a lot of TV. Star Maps, I went in, and I got called back for a bigger part, and then I got that part, and I thought it was that easy. So, I got my first audition. That movie went to Sundance, and that movie was a big deal. It was interesting though, because they didn't pay much and I was doing these like training videos. If you're an actor, especially when you're just beginning before you get in the unions, you can do like any kind of acting kind of job. And there's these training videos you can do for like companies. So like I was doing a Carl's Jr. training video for all the employees to teach them how to cook fries.
Nice.
So that's I had to awesome. Miss one day of filming and I got cut from the movie. So that was my first kind of heart.
Oh, boo.
I know. But I made $800, so that's okay.
There you go.
Right. Well, yeah, it's kind of hard to argue with that, right?
You buy yourself a nice suit for the next one.
I know, right?
When you're, When you're in room in the room and there's a bunch of other folks vying for the same same role that looks very similar to you, are there like any mind games that go on? Because I don't think I could help myself from like almost like trying to sabotage like another person and be like, dude, you got like it's weird. Like just something innocuous. Yeah, Dave, I'll take you out.
It's gonna happen. Yeah, I find actors to be of two various ilks. One is the saboteur who might try to be disruptive and engage you in mundane conversation to distract you from your focus and your script. And the other kind actually really have, I put myself in the other category, whether it's superstition or not. I actually do try to go by the axiom of whatever's mine is mine. And I'm going to see these people in these rooms a lot. So let me try to have at least some semblance of camaraderie here and hope for the best. It's really tricky, though. You know, we all work really hard and we all work to varying degrees and we're all looking for that big break. And when I got the big break with Our Brand is Crisis, you know, a big lead in a studio film with major A-listers, there was a lot of friends that, you know, they want to be happy and they say they're happy, but you know, you can feel right, it's not necessarily what about, it's more, what about my turn? So, but there were a couple very genuine, congratulations from my, competitors. So that was nice.
Well, I can imagine that, you know, I would think like acting and, you know, the arts and such can be such an emotional, like intimate thing for some people. And if like me and Dave, we're like just two, you know, two shitty podcasters, right? But then like, you know, if, you know, Dave might get picked up by like somebody who's actually good at this, and, you know, and I might be like, oh, that son of a bitch, you know, like we did this together. You like, you'd be happy for him.
Love each other. Right. And you do these podcasts and you're great. And all of a sudden Dave gets, you know, all of a sudden Howard Stern wants him as part of his staff on Sirius Radio. And he's, you know,
I'll see you later.
Right. Yeah.
With 20 million people. It might be true. What about you? Exactly. I'm with you.
Right. You know, and I'd be happy for him. I'd be like, you know, that's awesome, man. You know, but like when they need a janitor, you know, give me a call. I'm qualified for that. Like you need somebody to wipe down the desk after the show. Like that's all me. I can clean a microphone.
In all seriousness, I really appreciate the line of the way this interview is going. But in all seriousness, it is very strange because you really do like these people. But it's such human nature, huh? That like, what about me? You know?
Right.
Right.
I get it. So
I run into that as
they say that. Go ahead.
I'll say I run into that as an audio engineer, because like you know I'm friendly with a lot of other engineers, and for the most part we share information and share tricks of the trade and stuff. But yeah, it's like you kind of have to. You're competing with friends a lot of times and compatriots and people that you respect, but that's my job.
Right.
I'm just as available for that job too.
Do you think that's just the way it is in any industry? Any industry? It must be, huh? I guess we all kind of have to balance.
I think
that.
So. I think just some in industries situation. It's a little more subtle. Like you are competing, like if you're a retail worker, you're still competing for a management position, but it's not as outward, you know, it's you just kind of do your thing and get noticed, I guess. Some people
right. I mean, tricky about Hollywood. Yeah, what's tricky about Hollywood is there's just so few jobs. You know, you do get the idea that maybe in other industries there's more room for more of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it gets tight quick. I notice with acting. Maybe I should have done producing. Anyway, no, we're good.
Well, I would imagine there's a lot of good old boys club going on in that too. You know, it's one of those industries where a lot of. There's a lot of backroom deals really and handshakes, you know.
Which makes perfect sense. We all like to work with our friends. We all like to work with people we know are somewhat not crazy or crazy in the way we like them.
Right.
So I get it. And a lot of my friends have gone before me and are coming up right with me. And it's really natural that you start thinking about these people when you want to do your projects or you're creating projects.
Right. So, and that's my thing is always don't burn bridges. That's never burn a bridge because you never know what is going to lead to the other thing. Cause it's always this thing leads to the next thing leads to the next thing.
I learned that the hard way. I was dating this woman in LA the first year I got there, who was like, I think I was 26 and she was 40. She was like, a punk rock icon in LA. And I was a punk rock kid. So I had like a poster of her on my wall when I was 12. And then I moved to Hollywood
All right, living the dream.
12. Oh, it was the dream. It was a band called X. Her name was Xine Cervenka, and I burned every possible bridge after her and I had to break up. And she was connected. I had parts come flying at me in Hollywood because of how much this woman was respected.
Oh, man.
So, it was a heartbreak that I couldn't get over for years. I realized at my, it was kind of an amateur hour for me. I didn't realize how Hollywood worked. I thought, oh, it must be easy. Look at it. I'm already happening here.
Well, at least you persevered.
It got tough. I did persevere. I mean, there was a lot of, rocky valleys before the peaks came, but I'm here now and it's all gristle now. And, you do kind of feel like your whole life, all that stuff was necessary. As an actor, it's something you can all use in these performances.
Life lessons aplenty, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's a little awkward when we do this over the phone sometimes, so I apologize.
Oh, I'm okay with it. I feel you.
But is there any time like when you're you know, you're making moves and you know, you're on the push and you're coming up.
Yeah, I am right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And but if you look back, you know, there might be like the classic like waitress who's trying to make it, or like the 60-year-old woman who's tried all of her life and trying to make it. Like has your now oncoming success like made you like, man, I don't know.
Given them some perspective about people that
there you go.
Missed their chance.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, all of the people I run across, whether they're brand new at acting or they're people that I've known for years, I feel very supportive of brand new actors. Mm-hmm. I always want to be that person that is a little more seasoned. I always want to be the more positive influence.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate those people who gave me kind words. The only tricky part is, and it's just natural. When you first get into acting, you just can't help but have the assumption that somehow it's going to be easy. You almost have to, because you have to believe in yourself. So it's a little tricky when someone is new in the business and you've been at it for the amount of time you've been at it and they don't necessarily understand. And there is times when you feel the need to kind of maybe educate them a little bit so that I don't know what it is. Maybe it's an ego thing. No, it's not. I think it's just you really need to give someone a reality check so that they understand
sometimes
what it is.
Sometimes you just need to be that voice of reason or the wise
Otherwise,
man.
You're convinced you're just going to go to some strip mall and be discovered by George Clooney. You know, it's some open call. So, yeah, I get it. Acting is one of those jobs that anyone feels they can do.
not me. I'll throw that out there.
If they would just see me, they'd love me.
No, I'll fully admit that I did two school plays, and I knew from the auditions that I could not do acting.
Well, that was a smart move. I wish I had figured that out. You guys are pretty insane too. You are doing, you are in the entertainment biz. So you have that crazy itch the way I do. So
yeah, we do. We this whole thing started as a band back in college that we wrote one song, played it at one party. And then 2 years later, we're playing, you know, 300 person venues and stuff because, you know, screw it. If people want it.
Give
it
to right.
Them. Yeah.
So you were both in the band?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Brian really? Was he was the front man. I was the songwriter, guitar player. And yeah,
okay, why did you stop doing the music? Why did the music die? What's going on? He's still playing?
Well, Dave's still playing. It just kind of died for me because I was very adventurous, and I had the opportunity to move to Florida, I guess, so to speak. So I was like, oh, fuck it, let's
so
move
to speak.
To Florida.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Just tell the truth. That's you exactly. Went to rehab in Florida. It was rehab, yeah. Wasn't it, Brian? It's okay.
Hey, pills and drugs are really easy to get in Florida. That's all I'm saying.
True, and you guys are rock stars, so I get it. Don't think you can fool me. I've been through the ringer. So.
In all honesty, it may have been like a rehab for you, Brian, just not drug related.
Right.
Just a change of life related, I guess. Yeah. But we do kind of
music's hard. I mean. My dad was a musician, and when he had us kids, he had to kind of just go legit, and do a landscape gardening business to pay bills. And he got, he was diagnosed with leukemia and at 45 and, that lit the fire. He got really quick back into his music and it was, it's interesting, you know, when you, I don't know what you guys should be doing music again. That's my thinking right now.
We kind of do. Yeah. we have a segment that, we've been a little lax on. We're getting back into it. It's called That Time of the Month. And we cover a song by a female artist.
Are all your tunes, do they, all your tunes have a comedy bent or are they pretty straight? Okay.
I
always call it a really hard time comedy rock serious. Rap.
Yeah.
Like the Tenacious D style or not quite so avant-garde.
We're like so Tenacious rock. D, but minus like the talent. Like if you took everything that made
perfect.
I mean like similarities we had with Tenacious D. We're fat and we had access to microphones.
and a ridiculous
name. You're sharp and you're quick.
And two fat guys. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You said two fat guys, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Is that what it was called?
No, the name of our group was called White Trash is Stan.
Like, that's not bad. That's clever.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. That might be as bad as the title of our movie, Our Brand is Crisis. That is a really tough title for
that is,
people around.
Oh my God, when we used to play
for a
shows.
A movie about branding, that's a very tough title to brand, I got to tell you.
We always used to laugh because we'd be in newspapers or like we'd have banners on the bar or on the marquees, you know, for the shows. And never once did anybody spell it correctly. It was always like the white trash band, white trash a tan, like any variation of it.
And we don't learn, do we? We just keep going with our, there's a line in the movie about someone saying like all the thinking people will be voting for you. And the guy says, well, I don't want the thinking people. I need a majority. So I think maybe we could be. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe it should have just been called the White Trash Generic Band. And there you go.
Well, I always just used to play it off, and whatever they put my name on the marquee, that's what I say we were when we were on stage. Right. So if it was like
that's fair,
like White Trash a Tan, I'd be like, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we are White Trash a Tan from Chicago, Illinois. And just you gotta run with it.
Of ours for giving us. Damn those parents of ours for giving us such low self-esteem as kids, huh? We'll just take whatever we can get growing up. just make sure I'm cool. Right. Any name will work. It was so funny in the promotions of this film. There's two of us in the movie that aren't established stars yet. By my friend Ronaldo and I, we're both like the Latin actors. The movie takes place in Bolivia. We both have Bolivian blood. But yeah, I mean, you're so excited to be amongst all these A-listers who you've admired and wanted to work with for years that it's interesting how you're like, well, maybe my name will be in this one. Oh, no, that's okay. Maybe it'll be in this one. Oh, no, that's okay. But then, you get the PR people pressing and all of a sudden your name's everywhere. So it gets to become a business very quickly. Yeah. That's what becomes funny. So,
and that's one thing
I got you guys covered. If you want to get back in the music, let's get this going for it.
I'm down.
Believe in you.
Have you hear my voice right now, right? It sounds exactly like this when I sing.
I have a picture in my head of what the voice is. Sure.
I always feel like I sound like if Kermit the Frog had laryngitis, like that's what I like in my head. That's what I sound like. Like I have this like ridiculously absurd, raspy and deep
Are you
voice.
Bearded with glasses?
No glasses. Definitely bearded though.
Bearded. I don't know. Somehow I hear the beard. So I don't even know what that means, but I do hear the beard.
I fear the beard.
It's just the power of it. That's all.
Are we in mid? Are you in mid thirties yet, or you still in your twenties?
No, mid thirties, man. You are nailing it. Okay. Yeah, mid thirties. Got a wife, two kids. All right.
He's an actor, man. He's got to know how to read
people. Wife and two kids.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's awesome.
What do we got? 8 and 6, 9 and 10. What do we got?
Nope, 10 months and 4 years.
Oh, my initial thought was that because I'm in the same boat. I have a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old. So, I first thought was that, but I thought, well, maybe I'll give you a different. My thought was that though. How's the 10-month-old doing?
She's awesome. Teething really bad, so she just like screams like bloody murder. It's ridiculous.
Do you have a way to be out of the house? As a definition, at least. So you can have a. We can go to your man cave or something.
Well, I'm actually in my garage right now. Actually, where I'm at, I'm a. But my way to get out the
9 to 5 or
Yeah. I work and Dave bleeped this out because I've never said it, but I actually is what I do in my normal life.
That's awesome because I'm looking for auditions daily because or a job because I got 3 toddlers at home and daddy's got no excuse if he don't got an audition. So, I'm envious. I'll just come out and hang out if you want and tell him I have a job at the hotel. I don't even need to get paid. I just got to get out of that house.
I tell you what, if you're ever in Chicago, come with me. You can hang out. You can work the front desk. It'll be great.
Yeah. Major movie star Dominic Flores from Our Brand is Crisis. There you go.
Well, let me ask you this. Now I'm sure, especially like you mentioned, going off on auditions and such. I'm sure your wife is real supportive of your chosen craft and your hopes and dreams and ambitions, right?
My mom. Oh, how's that Freudian slip? I said my mom.
My wife. We can take that out if you want.
No, leave it in. We all understand that.
Yes.
It's a very telling moment. My wife's extremely supportive. It's interesting though, because she's an overachiever herself. So she's not with our 3 toddlers. She's not really Miss Homemaker, stay at home mommy. She's a producer. She's in the industry herself. She also works as a commercial talent agent, so she keeps very busy. She's able to work from home for a lot of it, but there's a balance with her, but she's extremely supportive. I don't think my career actually started taking off until I really connected to her and allowed her to. Those women, they're just better than us. They're smarter. We lift heavy objects or somewhat heavy objects if we're lucky, but they kind of are the brains. I don't know. I give full respect to the women. They're the guy. I get hippy dippy on this stuff. They're goddesses to me. And I think it's their time to rule the world. I think we should need to start backing off, let them give it a try. So yeah, my wife is everything. She takes me to the top and I turn around and give it all back to her. So
that's good though. That's the way it should be. My wife, she owns she owns and runs the family business and, does her thing. And then when it comes to being supportive, I got buddies whose wives won't let them go have a beer at the bar, but my wife gives me almost no flack. And, I told her that
right.
I wanted to start a podcast and she's like, yeah, no, go for it.
Yeah, and go for it. Yeah.
She gives me shit about it, but like she also thinks it's cool. Like when we have celebrities on or especially during we have a Better Call Saul podcast, especially when we're like in the top 100 of iTunes, she takes pride in that. She's like, wow. She's like, my no name ass husband somehow is up there with Joe Rogan. But
no, it's a big deal. No, honestly, honor that. I'm with you on that. It's so interesting because when we first started meeting and I was just pounding the pavement with auditions and it wasn't like a lot of finances were coming in, there's some people who are just, when you're walking out the door, I can be crass on this show, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Say whatever you want.
Yeah. So like, what's awesome about her is I wouldn't be walking out the door with her going, you better get a job today or you better do blah, whatever it was. She would be like, you have a huge cock and I love you and you're the best. Like, I don't have a huge cock, but she's smart enough to say that. That's the point. Right, you know how dumb we are. Just tell me that awesomeness and I walk out the proud peacock ready to conquer.
Right.
She's smart, She was very smart to take that road. Otherwise I'd just be walking out like the small man I am. And the good women, they understand that they really need to give us some good bullshit as husbands and men, and they'll get everything from us. So that's my
absolutely
opinion.
Absolutely. Dominic Flores, thanks so much for coming on Nothing Important. You're welcome back anytime.
Can I ask a couple questions before we wrap it up?
Yeah, dude.
One more, what'd you say? Sure.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine. He wanted me to ask you a couple questions, if that's okay.
Okay.
First, he wants to know what was it like to work on Sons of Anarchy? And addition from me, did they make you whisper angrily like everybody else on that show? Because that seems to be the thing.
I'll tell you, I didn't have to whisper angrily, but I got whispered at in an angry manner. They all are angry, aren't they? So my role on that was in one of the season's finales. I think it was the second to last season. Clay gets shot, and with the Ron Perlman character, right? He gets shot, and I'm his doctor, and I'm trying to save his life. And I'm taking him to the OR, and what's her name? Katie Seagal, in that low, grumbling voice. Says, oh. How's he going to be?
Yeah,
that's right. I got grumbled at. That's what they do on that show, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't watch it until like season four. I was actually in audio school at the time and staying with a friend of mine. It was out in Arizona, and he was obsessed with the show, so he made me watch it all the time. And I was just, I'm like, why are they just always whispering like they're pissed off, even in normal conversations?
Always. You know, Kurt Sutter has a new show. I think it's on ships or boats. I wonder if how their voices are going to be on that. Yeah,
they probably have to yell a lot on that.
I'm with you on that. I would love to have had a gravelly voice on that show. That would have been awesome. I was stuck being a doctor. I was a straight guy.
You got to speak with some tone and confidence. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Another.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go to another question, unless you were going to say something else.
No. Oh, the Sandra Bullock. Did you ask about Sandra? She's great.
No, I will. But the other question my buddy had was about Castle, and he was curious if you actually got to work with or hang out with Nathan Fillion, and is he as awesome in real life as he seems on the show?
He is as awesome in real life as he is on the show. I didn't hang out with him more than in my scene. When you're doing this, the TV shows where you're on for a week and you're just one part of the guest cast, you learn pretty quick just to kind of let them lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
But that man, he carries a big stick, and that show's been on for a while. So I just kind of watched him in his element, just kind of ruling the school. That's a fine lad, that Nathan Fillion, man. I'm a huge fan of his work, so that was awesome. Cool. And I'm glad he's just making major money on that Castle show. I don't know. I'm not a huge. I don't watch Castle very often, but I like when he's
one episode. I've seen one episode and I liked it.
But we love him, right? From Firefly and all those other, all the what's the Evil Dead stuff, right?
I don't even.
No,
know.
No, that's the other guy. That's Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell.
Right. But honestly, Bruce Campbell and Nathan Fillion, they have that same energy where they just kind of beat to their own drum. So I really want people like that to make tons of money. So I'm glad he is on Castle.
Absolutely. But as far as the Sandra Bullock thing.
It's gotta be a boring show to do, right? Come on. That's gotta be an old show after like 8 years.
Yeah,
that's gotta be tough to check in. I mean, So I hope he's getting paid well.
One note about the Sandra Bullock thing is Sandra Bullock is my brother's, the girl. You grow up obsessed with through movies and stuff, like the actress you have a crush on. That's totally my brother's chick.
Oh, is Sandra Bullock his, it's your friend's, what is it? Get out of jail free card, the cheat card.
Yeah. That would be his,
what's that one? They made a movie about it. Yeah. Whatever.
Ball pass.
Sandra Bullock, it's really weird. I love her. Since Speed, honestly, I've watched all her, a film. I mean, I kind of bypassed some of the romantic comedies, but I mean, like I'd really dig her. And my wife had a dream 2 years ago that I was going to be starring in a movie with her. So it does get pretty weird in my life.
That is odd.
My wife's kind of cosmic, and she had a dream, and I was laughing my ass off because I think the next day I had an audition for a Burger King commercial, and I'm like, sure, I'll be starring in a Sandra Bullock movie, honey. You from your lips to God's ears. And hey, like I said, trust the women. They know what to do. So you don't be surprised if you are right there going toe-to-toe with Joe Rogan at some point with these podcasts. I'm serious. You never know what can happen. You guys are great. Honestly, I really enjoyed my time with you, so awesome. I wouldn't be surprised. It's nice that I didn't talk about the usual BS. It was just talk, so that was great.
Yeah, we don't even really consider ourselves like a comedy podcast. We list ourselves under the personal journals because we're not really trying to be funny.
Right.
We're just naturally that funny. Ha ha. No, but yeah, we just want to talk to people because honestly, like people in your position, and that's we talk to a lot of actors and stuff because you just have cool stories, and your route takes so much of like investing in yourself and believing in yourself and chasing your dreams and all that crap, and that's way more interesting to talk about.
It's scientifically proved that jet fighter pilots and actors have the same. We have more testosterone than the rest of the world.
Huh.
Somehow jet fighter pilots and actors are in the same category. Like, it takes that much balls to do this job, and that actually motivates me on some level. So
I wonder if that's related to I recently read a study about how jazz improvisational jazz musicians activate a different side of their brain than musicians that play rehearsed stuff all the time. It's that moment. It's that seizing the moment part of your brain where it's the clutch gene, I guess it is, you know, where this is the moment and you have to nail it. And that activates like your full brain or something.
That's beautiful because did you see that movie Whiplash? The one that J.K. Simmons won?
I love that
movie.
Where
he's a jazz.
Yeah.
Right. And it was so interesting to watch him do it because on the one hand, he's doing this amazing kind of performance as a jazz conductor. But on the other hand, it's like, as actors, we kind of have to get into that same rhythm with improv jazz to do any kind of real performance.
Yeah.
So we have to get in that same brain space or it just doesn't happen. And you don't enjoy the movie. So, yeah. Wow, that just got cerebral and deep, guys. And we're at the end of the conversation. Great. But yeah, no, I appreciate that. That was. I'm gonna hold on to that jazz one. You gave me another story for future interviews.
Awesome, yeah. Put that in your pocket.
Well, awesome. Dominic, dude, it's been absolutely awesome. I hope we get to talk again. Good luck.
I'd love to promote.
Dude, man, we'd love to have you. Absolutely, Dominic Flores. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Be sure to follow Nothing Important online at nothingimportantpodcast.com. Find us on iTunes, on Twitter at NotImportantPC, and you can also find us on Facebook. Nothing Important is recorded with help from Third City Sound in Joliet, Illinois. Thanks for being awesome.